Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Lisa H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Tennessee. Today is Wednesday, May 15th, 2024, and this is the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today, we're going to be reading from the Big Book in the chapter There Is a Solution on page 19. We'll be reading and commenting on the fourth paragraph that begins, "Of necessity, there will have to be discussion through how we may help meet their needs." Comments on that one paragraph. Today's readers are, for the 12 steps, Patrick O., the 12 traditions, Lila M., readers of the text, Nancy R., Vanessa G., and Rick J. Our newcomer greeter is Anne-Marie M. Our second hour host is Leah S., and announcements will be given today by Kathy S. The reference numbers for yesterday, Tuesday, May 14th, 2024, for the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, it's 21,397. That's 21397. For the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, it's 21,398. That's 21398. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Patrick O. to please read the 12 steps.
Hi, good morning, everybody. It's Patrick O. from Tennessee, recovering compulsive eater. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick O. from Tennessee. And I will now ask Lila M. to please read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Lila M., grateful recovered food addict in Toronto, Canada. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Lila M. from Toronto, Canada. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book in the chapter There Is a Solution on page 19. We'll be reading and commenting on the fourth paragraph that begins, "Of necessity, there will have to be discussion through how we may help meet their needs." And I will now ask Nancy R. to please begin reading.
Good morning. It's Nancy R., recovered compulsive overeater from Illinois. Of necessity, there will have to be discussion of matters medical, psychiatric, social, and religious. We are aware that these matters are, from their very nature, controversial. Nothing would please us so much as to write a book which would contain no basis for contention or argument. We should do our utmost to achieve that ideal. Most of us sense that real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and a respect for their opinions are attitudes which make us more useful to others. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our conscious thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. Anytime we have discussion of medical, psychiatric, social, and religious matters, it's easy to have contention and disagreement. And one of the things I'm so grateful for about this book and Overeaters Anonymous is that we don't discuss those matters. I know they're discussed here in the book, but we don't discuss them. We discuss the solution. You know, we discuss what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And we ask God to change our character defects and to remove them so that we can have real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints. Respect for others' opinions. It just makes us more useful to others rather than being an argument or discussion with them about our differences. To be respectful and tolerant. Those seem to be opposite of some of my character defects. And so I continue to ask God to remove my character defects and have me be more respectful and more tolerant. because my life as an ex-problem overeater depends on my constant thought of others and how I'm able to meet their needs. I want to share a story of, except for yesterday, it was a miracle in this program of my continued spiritual connection and my growth and my spiritual connection with my higher power. My daughter's father-in-law died, and I was going back and forth in my head about how to best support her and her husband, and during the time of the wake and the funeral. And early yesterday morning, just in time for me to get dressed and grab my food and get in the car and travel to the funeral, I got this overwhelming intuitive thought that came from my higher power and said, you need to be there. You need to be there. And I was like, but now it's too late. Now too late. I'm not ready. I'm not dressed. I don't have my food ready. Blah, blah, blah. Just get up and do it. Just get up and do it. Just go. You need to be there. And it was this overwhelming intuitive thought. And so I did that. I threw on some clothes. I threw some food together, abstinent food, everything I needed. And I was able to be more useful to others. I just showed up. And I'm grateful for that, for this constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. I have no idea how I met anybody's needs yesterday, but I showed up and listened to them, to the thought. With that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy R. from Illinois. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your shares to every third day in order that others might share their experience as well. So if you shared on Monday or Tuesday on any of the vision meetings, we ask you to hold back this morning. And who would like to share on what was read?
Margaret D.
Katie
Georgia.
Tanya
D. from Illinois.
Okay. Rachel
D.
Margaret D.
Katie
D.
Rachel K.
I missed some. Okay, Janet B. Rachel K.
Jen A.
Okay, I missed. Oh, Jen, thank you.
Shanna C.
Okay, Shanna C. I got you, Melissa.
Jennifer
I might have missed
C.
somebody, but I'm sorry, say again.
Jennifer C.
Jennifer C., thank you. Okay, I'm going to tell you what I got, and you can tell me if I missed anybody. I have Margaret D., Katie G., Shanna C., Janet B., Rachel K., Jen A., Melissa C., Jennifer C. Did I miss somebody in there?
Vanessa
Outstanding.
G.
Outstanding. I'm sorry, who G.?
Vanessa.
Vanessa. Thank you, Vanessa. Okay, here we go. Margaret D., you're up, followed by Katie G.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. My name is Margaret D., and I'm in Georgia. And I'm just grateful for today. This paragraph really brings to mind how powerless I am and how my dependence has to be on a power greater than myself. And I'm always going to have, or what I've seen so far in my short little 72 years, is I'm always going to be selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and afraid. I mean, that's just my human nature. But what I am learning and and thank you so much to the first speaker for what she shared, because she really honed in on that my goal is to practice being sober, considerate, and helpful every day to the best of my ability. And by being abstinent, those intuitive thoughts have weight and they have depth. And I don't argue with them anymore. Like, oh, that's ridiculous, or, you know, that's just last night's dessert talking to me or whatever. I don't have a lot to share around this, but I do have a lot of, it just strikes me very deeply that yes, things, different matters are prone to be loaded with being contentious and the other things that, you know, Bill wrote about. But the only way for me to not do that by myself is to stay home with a paper bag over my head. And I don't believe that that's what my higher power wants me to do. So when it talks about these things that he, you know, he wishes that he could have written a book where this didn't occur, it's like, it's fine that it does occur because I have the tools now to deal with it. And every time I run into a place where, you know, there's some kind of friction, I've got my higher power to guide me through it. And that's how I grow. I don't grow by avoiding situations. I grow by being in the middle of them and practicing, you know, whatever is needed at the time, whether it's being sober, considerate, or helpful. I don't know if that makes any sense, but you know, the big book also talks about that we're spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation. And again, to me, that's not staying home, you know, with the paper bag over my head. And the last thing that I want to share is that my higher power definitely, absolutely, totally helps me get through any situation that he puts me in. Imagine that. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret D. And Katie G., you're up, followed by Shanna C.
Good morning, Lisa. Thanks for taking the meeting. This is Katie G., recovered compulsive eater in Boston. You know, I came out contentious and argumentative. And today, thanks be to God, I'm not, but I am a fighter. And a couple things I wanted to share. One of them is that one of the things I fought on for a long time was about religion. And I thought that, you know, religion was wrong and religion was the problem. And what I think is so amazing is that this book, like Agnostics, it teaches me, be quick to see where religious people are right. Be quick to see where other people are right, where Overeaters Anonymous is right, make use of what they offer. And I find it so interesting that the sick man's prayer, I have a dear friend who I do work with, and one of the lines I missed out of the sick man's prayer, which is, God, help me to see that this person like me is spiritually sick. Help me to demonstrate the same kindliness, pity, and patience I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. God, save me from being angry, and how can I be helpful? You know, when I first got into the rooms and I heard that I needed to help others, I was like, that is not my idea of a fun time, right? And I was super glad that you all needed to help me, because I was like, all right, well, they can spend their time helping me. But the way I get out of anger, the way I get free, is number one, seeing how I am exactly like other people. That has been the most important part of my inventory work, how I can see that they, like me, they are like me, are spiritually developing, that I may not do the exact things that I do, but I do those things in other areas of my life. And what I mean, the best line to me of this book is obviously what everyone probably wants to hear, which is constant thought of others and how I can meet their needs. Constant is always there for you, always with you, always helping you. And, you know, I need to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and to those around me. And that means that my needs don't matter. I'm an agent for God today. God takes care of my needs. I don't need to fight for them anymore. I don't need to be contentious anymore. I don't need to have opinions on things anymore. My primary purpose is to help others. And I don't always want to, as the previous speaker said, I don't always like my assignment, but you know what? I love it because God is love and God fills me with love, especially when I can get out of myself using step 10, get out of myself, help others. You know, that's the real deal. And I'm so grateful for it. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Katie G. And Shanna C., you're up, followed by Janet B.
Good morning. Thanks, Lisa. This is Janet C., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Tennessee. Thanks to everyone who shared. And I'm just reminded that that thank God that tolerance doesn't necessarily mean agreeing or liking whatever it is going on. I am allowed to have an opinion, provided that I'm aware that it is just an opinion and I could quite possibly be wrong. And the beauty of this, I get to be wrong today. You know, and I think a lot of the things that drives a lot of my intolerance is there's an underlying old idea there that I'm not allowed to like someone who's different than me or accept someone who's different than me. There's that perverse streak that's in there that is just under the surface that I don't even realize is there a lot of times. There lies the fear. Well, you know, I had a sponsor one time tell me, for God's sake, stop thinking about it so much and just love them. Oh, well, that's a novel idea. You mean I'm allowed to just do that? Yeah, that's what I get to do today. But I forget that I get to do that because, you know, that self-will creeps in and at times, and thankfully I have a design for living that works, and when it crops up, you know, being restored to sanity means that I'm aware of this stuff as it crops up, and I don't have to act on it, I don't have to ruminate on it, and I have a way to get out from under it, recognize it, talk about it if I need to, and that's the thing that actually spurs me on to helping others. I'm not naturally bent on helping other people. I'm naturally bent on thinking of me. But what happens is through the process of these steps, well, first, food beat me into a state of reasonableness. You know, crushed by self-imposed crisis, I could neither postpone or evade. You know, I had to ruthlessly face the proposition that God is either everything or else he's nothing when it came to this. So you take the food away, and then there's left with me, and then there's just nervous person that doesn't know how to deal, but was shown this way of life and how to live it daily. And I get to show up and practice this stuff and make mistakes and be wrong. And through those mistakes, I get to learn from them, and I get to share those mistakes with the people that I help, because that's what people really identify with. I don't identify with people who are perfect or whatever. I identify with people who are hurting. Or whatever, and I admire those who have come out on the other side of it through God's grace. And so, anyway, I get to be real, authentic, and I don't have to perform today. Anyway, grateful that I know that that's what's helped me, and I hope that helps someone else. Have a great day. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Shanna C. from Tennessee. And Janet B., you're up, followed by Rachel K.
Hi, good morning. This is Janet B., recovered compulsive eater in North Carolina. So, right, the first line, of necessity, there will have to be discussion of matters medical, psychiatric, social, and religious. Okay, we don't discuss religion here, right? We don't go and say, I'm Jewish, I'm Catholic, I'm, you know, I'm Buddhist, I'm Muslim. We don't do that. So what do they mean, right? So I just quickly looked up the word religion, and the first definition was the belief in and worship of a superhuman power or powers, especially a god, capital G, or god, small g. So the belief in and worship of a superhuman power. Boy, that is what I needed, because I could not stop binging my brains out. I went to meetings, I got food plans, I had sponsors, I did assignments, and I couldn't stop binging. Couldn't stop until God entered. And how did God enter? Just when I decided I would go to any length, and I went out and I asked him to. And, you know, the definition says the belief and worship in God. I had always believed in God, right? I was brought up to believe in God. I always believed God existed. But for me, God was like a genie in the bottle, like a Santa Claus genie in the bottle. Here's my list of everything I want. Come out of your bottle, give me what I want, then go back in your bottle and leave me alone. But that's not what the pure definition of religious is. It's the belief in, but that's only part of, it's worship. And what does worship mean? It means first acknowledging that God is God and I'm not, and surrendering, submitting my will and my life to him.
And that's what this book is about, right? It's about how all the food plans, phone calls, meetings in the world won't help unless God comes in and does a renovation job in my heart. Because at my roots, I am selfish and self-centered. And that's why it's so important, as this paragraph tells us, that I have to focus my life on constantly thinking of others and how I can help meet their needs. No, when Bill saw Ebby, one of the things he said about him is his roots grasped a new soil. My roots were in selfishness and self-centeredness. I needed God to kind of replant me in unselfishness and God-centeredness. And the way that I help him is by trying to think of others and how I can help him, how I can help them. And that's just what I believe is so important, that we have to not only believe in God, but to worship him by our surrender and helping others. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Janet B. from North Carolina. And Rachel K., you're up, followed by Jen A.
Hi, this is Rachel K., compulsive overeater in Indiana. And gosh, all the shares have been so great. Wow, is it odd or is it God? I cannot believe that we're reading this paragraph today, because this morning I got up, I had a resentment, so I wrote a 10th step. And the 10th step was about, I love to read, and I just finished a book, a novel. And then I listened to an interview with the author. And the author started talking about some of her political beliefs, and I disagreed with them. And so I got this big resentment. I didn't like the book anymore. And so... which is work of fiction, right? And so I wrote a 10 step and realized, like I don't have to agree with people, you know, I don't have to agree with people. And the way this ties into this paragraph is it talks about, you know, first of all, controversial matters, and then also that constant thought of others and how we can meet our needs. And so love and tolerance is my code, or has to be my code, not because it's a nice thing to do. It is. You know, love and tolerance, that's a good way to live. Everybody, I think, would agree that. But love and tolerance has to be my code, or else I die. This is a fatal disease. It doesn't seem like love and tolerance would have a whole lot to do with me, like, binging on hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of food, thousands of dollars worth of food until I want to kill myself. But somehow those two things are tied together. And the way they are tied together is because unless I have love and tolerance, and the way I get love and tolerance is by working these steps, then I am not going to have a relationship with God. And unless I have a relationship with God, I will not allow his power to come in and remove that compulsion from me to eat that food that is going to make me want to kill myself. So it says, you know, the constant thought of others and how I can meet their needs. It doesn't say the constant thought of others and how I can meet their needs if I agree with their politics, if they like the same things that I do, if, you know, I agree with them on, you know, matters of, you know, social, religious, whatever, you know, it doesn't even say if I like them. It just says, you know, constant thought of others and how to meet their needs, whether I like them or not. You know, I can actually love people that I don't particularly like, you know, just the way I believe that my higher power loves all of his children, you know, because when I did step three and agreed to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, I agreed that, okay, I'm going to try to be as much like God as I can. I'm never going to get close, but I'm going to try to have love for all of his kids, including me, by the way, but I am going to try to think God's thoughts and to do God's actions as he would have me be. And that's my time. And anyway, thanks everybody for letting me share, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Rachel K. from Indiana. And Jen A., you're up, followed by Melissa C.
Good morning. This is Jen A. I'm here in Colorado, recovered. Thank you, God, for your grace and mercy on my life today. I got to give up. As long as there's the fight, the food's always going to be the answer to my problems. This whole chapter, there is a solution, is just it shows me that on a daily basis, you know, recovered or recovering in the food, out of the food. I need a power greater than myself every single day for the self-centeredness to be removed. You know, I always believed that I was powerful enough and big enough. There's a Justin Bieber song, my kids used to sing it, and there's this little rap portion that goes, you know, he's bigger than me, stronger than me. And, you know, it was just like, I thought, oh yeah, he is. And I started listening to that with my kids in the car one day after going to meetings. And I was like, he is bigger than me and stronger than me. And he can remove and he can help remold, remake, and reshape a girl like me to become less self-centered, less self-consumed. And he does it through the work of this 12-step program. And I'm in awe. I'm in awe today. You know, I just traveled to Syracuse University for 7 days with 10 people in my family, on an airplane, in a minivan. I stayed in a house with all of them. One of them was my ex-husband and his wife, my mom and dad, and my dad's 81 years old and aging. And I don't know if any of you have aging parents, but wow, there's a lot going on. And my life depends on how I show up. And I wouldn't be able to show up with love and tolerance. You know, I was the girl who was judgmental, and I still can be, I'm just going to say, you know, running commentary on people, nitpicking, nagging. That was me. I didn't need to write down inventory. Huh. I could just do it on other people. But what this program has taught me is that, you know, I have to be true to myself. I have to look at all these things. I have to say to myself, aha, why are you looking at those people like that, Jen? Because they're a reflection of you or a reflection of how you used to be. And how are you going to show up and love them today? You know, how do I love the man that I was married to for 14 years and his new wife? How do I love my dad in the aging process on the airplane when he interrupts me 7 times to get back to the screen on his iPad so he can watch the hockey game on a 4-hour flight flying home to Colorado? Love and tolerance is my code. But I do want to say one other thing is that, you know, as I do this work, something that I'm learning, and I've been given the awareness, Reader's Anonymous, God gives me an awareness through this inventory process and through the solution in my life. And how he does it is he shows me that I don't also have to lay down and be a doormat to people in my life anymore. I don't have to listen to this anymore. I don't have to have the nagging and the nitpicking going on in my life of other people to me. So it's a double-sided coin, and I just have to remind myself that, you know, I didn't come here to recover. I came here to live, and that's the beautiful part of this program. So I'll just keep coming back, and with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Jen A. from Colorado, and Melissa C., you're up, followed by Jennifer C.
Hey, good morning, Lisa. Thanks so much for your service this morning. This is Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York. And I read this and I think, I remember like in early abstinence and early recovery, I was really very focused on getting my needs met. You know, and those were like, I was very food focused, right? My nutritional needs. And I had to orchestrate and make sure that my needs were going to be met as far as my food is concerned. And by the way, that hasn't wavered, except it's my responsibility now to make sure that that's taken care of, right? Like, I don't put that's no one else's responsibility. It solely relies on me. And I'm really clear, and but that's just the beginning. You know, what I found out is that I am not just, you know, a distinct entity. I am different than other people. And my what causes this, you know, not what causes this, but what sets me apart as other people is, yes, I have a severe food allergy and an obsession of the mind. But beyond that is I have a way that I must live. I actually can't engage. Oh, my God, I can't engage in controversy, and I can't engage in argument and fault-finding. And, you know, I mean, I'm listening, you know, I listen to everybody, right, all these shares. And, I mean, you know, this is current stuff. This is not just in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, have love and tolerance for, you know, for the still sick and suffering compulsive eater. It's love and tolerance for, yes, my aging mom, right? and to show up and to actually, what I found is, tolerate my own discomfort that I feel. It's not just I have to stomach my mother or stomach my siblings in the care of my mom, but my own discomfort, because I have incredible discomfort. I have to stop being so focused on my comfort and my ease and focus instead on other people. And, you know, like a big thing that's come up for us with the care of my mom is it looks like it's going to go to the next level. Like we are going to have to find a place for my mom, and my sister is no longer able to do this awesome task. And here's me in my selfishness. I want to find fault with my sister who's done so much for us. I want to find fault with my brother-in-law. I want to be all full of self-righteous indignation and that's my self-centeredness. And I'm so grateful that I have friends in this program, a loving sister in this program who tells me the truth, who reminds me, you can't hate. No, you have to find love. No matter what anybody's perspectives or viewpoints are, your very life is going to be dependent upon how can you help meet, yes, their needs, everybody's needs. And when that becomes my focus, yeah, my food is quiet. And my food is like, it's a non-issue. And I'm directed to what this is really all about, which is living my life, you know, according to this design. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Melissa C. from New York. And Jennifer C., you're up, followed by Vanessa G.
Hi, good morning. Jennifer C., Greenville, South Carolina. Thank you for your service this morning. Thank you, everybody, for your shares. Oh, my gosh. Thank you, everybody, for your shares. And also, this line, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. When I was in my disease, my whole world was about what I weighed and how I was going to avoid food or how I was going to get more food. My mood depended on what I weighed. And my mood depended on getting more food or how I was doing that day with, you know, my new diet. My world revolved around that reality for me. Like, that was my world. So no wonder, right? Like, no wonder addicts become so self-centered because their whole lives depend upon how they're going to get their next fix and what they're going to do to try to control it. So this book teaches me that while we're all selfish, right, human nature is selfish. This book tells me that because I'm an addict, because I've already conceded to having an alcoholic mind, this book tells me that I'm even more selfish, right? That I'm an extreme case of selfishness. That's not what makes me a compulsive overeater, but that's what addiction does to us. It warps our lives and it warps our minds. And so it also tells me in this book that above everything, I have to get rid of this selfishness. Because for me, it kills me. The guy next to me who's not an addict, maybe above everything, he doesn't have to get rid of his selfishness, right? Like maybe my spouse or my kids or other people in my lives that are really selfish, maybe they don't have to above everything get rid of it because they're not going to kill themselves with a substance if they don't. For me, the reality is that I have to go to any lengths to be rid of this selfishness. It says that we shall do our utmost to achieve that ideal, right? So I'm working every day. I'm doing my utmost every day to achieve all of these ideals. And it also tells me that while I'm doing my utmost and working every day, doing my 10 steps, remaining abstinent, working with others, it tells me I can't get rid of my selfishness by myself. also, by the way, above everything, you have to get rid of it. Oh, and also you can't. I can't do it without God. I need God to deliver me every single day from the bondage of self. That's what the third step prayer reminds me. Relieve me of the bondage of self. I'm asking every single day to do God's will better, to love people better, to be filled with his power, his love, and his way of life every day. So I'm so grateful for all of you this morning reminding me that this is my life's work, and this is what this book is all about, is teaching me how to rely on God so that I can be delivered from this selfishness. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Jennifer C. from South Carolina. And Vanessa G., please share with us.
Thank you, Lisa. This is Vanessa G., recovered in New Mexico. You know, I too want to hone in on that last sentence. Our very lives depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. I know that at least twice in my life, I've been on the brink of death as a result of addiction. And I've been pulled back as a result of going through the 12 steps of being presented with this book, the instructions in this book, into being alive again. And so anytime this book talks about the fatality of my disease, of my addiction, I pay attention. I really pay attention because I know that I got really, really close to dying from addiction. This last time, you know, laying in my bed, you know, dying of COVID and obesity, you know, the hand of God came across the country and gave me a lifeline again. You know, people who depend on this book, who go through this book, and who helped me meet my needs. You know, my disease causes me to have constant thought of myself and constant thought of how I can meet my need for my addictive, you know, substances. And that takes me all the way down to where that's all I think about. And so that needs to be replaced. It needs to be healed. And it needs to be brought into the constant thought of others and how I may help meet their needs. You know, just as the last person talked about, destroying that selfishness, that self-centeredness, which is the root of my problem, and needing God's help in doing that, whatever that God means to me, whatever that higher power is that I have to find, I find it through these steps, and I find it through the words of God. But you have saved my life. My very life depends upon this. And so my attitude has changed. And it's, you know, it hasn't changed because of me trying to change it. It's changed because of the process that's outlined in this book. There is a solution, and I found it, and I appreciate it, and I'm grateful for it. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Vanessa G., and from New Mexico. And we are on page 19. We've read and are commenting on the fourth paragraph that begins, of necessity, there will have to be discussion through how we may help meet their needs. We have time for three or four more shares. Who else would like to share?
Regan W.
Oh, somebody W.
Regan W.
Okay. Somebody W and somebody M. So first, who's somebody W?
That's
Chris.
Me, Regan W. in New York.
Thank you. Regan W. and Chris M.
Loretta
One or two
H.
Men. Loretta and Lynn. Okay, let's stop with those. Loretta H., Lynn S. Okay, Regan W., you're up, followed by Chris M.
Hi, everybody. Regan W. in New York. Thanks, everybody, doing service. What struck me most reading this was the tradition. In fact, when we read it, and it said we have to have discussion of these matters, medical, psychiatric, social, and religious, I was like, ooh, do we? And I did a quick Google, and this was written in 1939, but the traditions were written in 1946 because there clearly probably was lots of controversy after this, and it made me grateful for the traditions. I was at a meeting on Sunday night where we discussed Tradition 5, and our primary purpose is to carry the OA message. And I'm really grateful for the unity in this program that evolved from having a very, you know, clear singularity of purpose, and how much I can lean on so many different fellows in the program who, you know, we have such different lives, diverse backgrounds, and it doesn't matter because we all understand the disease. And yeah, the selfishness, it's helpful hearing everyone talk about it. I really am such a selfish person at heart, and it makes me think of my dad, who's the addict in our family, who was like sociopathically self-centered and still is. He never found recovery. And like how much anguish I feel when I think that I'm like him. But I'm different because I am working with a program, and I'm really grateful for like meeting like today and all of the step work where I get to just like have a psychic change. But I do have to constantly be reminded to think of others. Like my inherent inclination is always to think of myself. And when I like what helps me make phone calls the most is thinking of others that are in need. And when I can make a call to a newcomer or somebody that just shared in a meeting that they were really struggling, I for like 5 minutes get to think about something other than myself. And that actually makes me feel better. It's like this counterintuitive thing that like getting out of my own head and listening, being there for somebody else without any feedback, without any advice, you know, not pretending to be an expert in anything that I'm not an expert in, sharing experience, strength, and hope if they ask, but like I get to recover one day at a time, and like also being like thinking of other people is esteemable, and so it helps build my self-esteem and just feel better about myself, which was always something that made me eat, was like feeling like crap and ruminating on all the things that I thought I did wrong. So anyways, grateful to be here and listen to all of you all pass.
Thank you, Regan W. from New York, and Chris M., you're up, followed by Loretta H.
Good morning. This is Chris M. from Virginia, and I really like this passage because it points out that the spiritual is really the root. I had a slip on Saturday, and I saw it right away, and I saw how the chemical allergy had been in effect. One thing affected another, and I lost my sanity temporarily. But as I thought about it more, that I thought that would give me peace, realizing what happened there and changing a behavior. But that didn't give me peace, and so I went to my higher power. I did a really honest inventory of the episode and discovered that it did have spiritual roots. I had let my spiritual discipline, for lack of a better word, but really surrendering, I had let that lapse a little bit, just enough to have an open hole, and the addiction walked right in. But I came out the other end stronger because I did that honest search. I saw some other behaviors that were not helping me. I saw an emotional state and attitude that I went in because I wasn't spiritually in tune. And once I prayed that out and received grace, as always, from God, I feel more powerful than ever now because I have gone through that, and I'm just thankful and grateful for the peace and even joy that I have now that I didn't have for 3 or 4 days while I was knowing that something wasn't right. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris M. from Virginia. And Loretta H., you're up, followed by Lynn S.
Good morning, Lisa, and good morning all, along with my precious God. Seriously, you are saving my life, Loretta H., in North Carolina. And I also, that step 12 at the end, our very lives as problem drinkers depends upon constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. And we are reborn, death to selfishness. It's and we get to contribute to life once we let go of that selfishness and that concern about other people's shortcomings, because the only person that I need to focus on today first is God and his will and his way, because my trust fund is my third step. You know, my actions are my life, and my mind is the thinking. So I have to stop, because I have the disease of the body, which wants, especially for me, wants me to die of starvation. And then my mind tells me that that's the proper way to solve all my problems, which it isn't. So I must turn, and this morning I read in my little reflections book, no God, N-O God, no peace. No K-N-O-W, no peace. Then I won't take a piece, whether it's a piece out of somebody or a piece out of my refrigerator. I can find out who God needs me to be that day. And most of the time, it is to be of maximum service to God and to others and to help. They say there's a long period of breathing. We must take the lead. So our Creator must show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. He is my guiding light, and you are my guiding light. So I must always, always be focused on his will, that third step. Who does he want me to be? Where am I going today? You know, so that I can be rid of that selfishness and death to self. And then the devilments or anything that's troubling, I can tolerate my reality in my little cocoon. And it's very little. And I just want to end with this. On Good Friday, Cardinal Dolan was on talking about Good Friday and worldly clamors. And he said, everybody should have a 12-step program and they might know how to live in the world today. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Loretta H. And Lynn S., you're up. You have about 2.5 minutes.
Good morning, Vision. This is Lynn S., recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. I came into OA around May the 9th, 1989. This is May the 15th, 2024. And in those years, I have read the big book in dozens and dozens and hundreds of meetings. And this line, most of us sense that real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and a respect for their opinions are attitudes which make us more useful to others. I chose not to see that line for all these years. What? No, you just set them straight. People needed to be set straight. They needed to know how to work it. They needed to know what to do, and I was just the gal to tell them, because I could not stand my discomfort when people weren't doing it, whatever it was, the way I thought it should be done, especially program. Because, I mean, I knew it. I knew what to do. I knew how to do it. So sit down, shut up, let me set you straight, and off we go. It's taken all this time, starting in June 2023, for me to understand that the chapter is called Working with Others, not Working on Others. It's taken me since June 2023 to understand what real tolerance of other people's shortcomings means, and viewpoints, and respect respect for others, for their opinions. Why, Lynn? Because this will make me more useful to others. So then I can go on to that line that I used to quote all the time. Then I can help others and think of their needs because my life depends on it and because my God asks me to do it.
Time.
And thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you, Lynn S. from Toronto, Canada. And thank you to everyone who shared this morning. Join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. The share ID for today, Wednesday, May 15th, 2024, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,404. That's 21404. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And Vanessa G., will you please read, our book is meant to be suggestive only until, keep you until then.
Thank you. My name is Vanessa G., and I'm recovered in New Mexico. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then, thank you.